Welcome to the Language and Literacy Collective podcast, where we share tips and strategies to support language development and encourage a love of literacy in all children. This podcast is hosted by two sisters who share a passion for all things language and literacy. I'm Liz, a speech therapist and behavior analyst.
And I'm Stephanie, a literacy specialist and former classroom teacher. Our goal is to make literacy inclusive and accessible to all by equipping parents and teachers with the tools necessary to best support their kiddos. Now let's get started with today's episode.
To the Language and Literacy Collective podcast. Today we are joined by Callie Knight from K Knight Therapy, and we are going to be discussing the topic of narrative development. And I found Callie through Instagram, and I attended one of her Instagram lives on the topic of narrative development, and I was so impressed with all of her knowledge and how passionate she was about the topic. So I was like, this is a perfect excuse to get her to come on and ask her a million questions about narrative development so I can learn more. And I know that she's going to have a lot to say on the topic. So we're super excited to have her. So hi, Callie. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me.
So we usually start off by asking our guests to tell us a little bit about themselves and where they or how they got to where they are today.
Okay, well, maybe I'll go backwards. I'm currently a school-based speech language pathologist. I serve children from about preschool age 3-4 to sixth grade. I did my undergraduate and graduate degrees in communication disorders at Brigham Young University. While I was there as both a graduate and undergraduate student, I worked with Dr. Doug Peterson and then subsequently Trina Spencer, who are the narrative gurus. If y'all know anything about narratives, they are the gurus and the go-to people. So between their mentorship, their research, their passion, in combination with my self-study and experience, I am sold on narratives. So that's how I got to be a narrative geek.
Awesome. Yeah, I think that they were actually, they joined that live with you and you were like almost like facilitating the discussion. So that was really cool to learn from them as well. So we know that you are very passionate about narrative-based language intervention. Can you let our listeners know what you're talking about when you refer to narratives in general?
Yes, very, very simply stated, at its core, narratives are just stories. So if I said something like narrative-based language intervention, that's simply using storytelling as the medium or mechanism to teach language skills. In a very succinct nutshell.
Gotcha. Okay. That seems straightforward enough.
So why is narrative development and storytelling so important?
Okay. This is a multifaceted question and response that, oh my goodness, I could talk about for forever. But in general, there is social relevance, there's academic relevance, personal relevance, oh my goodness, cultural relevance, safety and self-advocacy relevance. And I'll explain a teeny tiny bit what all of those mean. So like social relevance, we tell stories all the time, all throughout the day, all throughout our weeks. We're telling stories, whether they're long, elaborate stories, where we're venting about something that happened that week or something really short, like, y'all, I left my phone in the other room. It whatever it is, it's a story. I mean, even think about the last time you talked to your friend on the phone, or I was going to say go to lunch, but with COVID, you're not probably going to lunch with your friends very often anymore. But when you did, you banter back and forth and you share stories. And so there's this social relevance. We connect with one another by sharing stories and sharing experiences. So there's that social push and motivator there. There's academic relevance. So these stories or these narratives require a certain level of language complexity and abstractness. And that is 100% necessary for school, because if you're an educator, you probably know, whether it's the Common Core State Standards or whatever your state's equivalent is, there is narrative type language requirements or expectations, whether that's for retelling a story or generating your own story. This is something that kids need to be able to do in school. So there's that academic relevance. It's personally relevant. I shouldn't say all people, but in general, we like to talk about ourselves. We like to tell about the cool things that happened, the horrible things that happened, right? Like we've all got stories. And so we get attention for doing that, whether not like it's always a spotlight, but we get that attention, that connection. Oh my goodness, I'm out of order. Cultural relevance. Cultural relevance, everyone. Despite what culture you're in, you tell stories. They may not look the same. They may not be sequenced the same, but everyone tells stories. And so as a speech language pathologist, this is great for working with students who are culturally and linguistically diverse. It's a great way to kind of even the playing field and work with everyone. And then my last big point for why it's important is safety and self-advocacy. Regardless of what it is, if something bad ever happened, I'd want either my child or my friend, whoever it is, to be able to recount whatever happened or an experience with enough detail and clarity that they could get help.
Absolutely.
Granted, when you're three or whatever, that may not be a lot, but it could be enough to get help.
Yeah, those are like really great points. I feel like, you know, coming from the world of special education as we do, Callie and I do, like, you know, we can see the need for those narrative skills in a lot of, you know, a lot of different areas, but also with typically developing children as well. Like, it's how we navigate our world. It's how we communicate with others, and the impact of not developing those skills. It really, you know, you're not able to have meaningful interactions with the people around you. So I think you touched on, it was cultural relevance, academic, personal, safety,
and social.
And social, yeah. So super, super important. I think even as an SLP though, and this is one of the reasons that I like really loved your Instagram live. I know I like fangirled after. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm gonna message her and tell her how obsessed I am. I was so excited because it's a topic that I don't really know a lot about. And when you see another professional, you know, speaking about what they're really passionate about, it just, you're like, ooh, now I need to know more. But I feel like even as a speech therapist, I don't feel confident in my knowledge of really what narrative development should look like. And I think I asked this question too, like specifically, you know, where can I get some like developmental norms about, you know, what are the expectations surrounding narrative development? Like if I have a family or a student that comes to me and like presents with a certain profile, like, I don't know that I would be able to say like, oh yeah, you know, those, the skills that he or she has in terms of being able to tell stories is appropriate or not. So, and I think too, it's important for parents as well to be able to kind of determine like, is the way my child is like sequencing elements of a story or retelling or developing in that way, because it's so important, like, are they, you know, developing those skills in a way that would be expected. So I know this is like a really big topic, but can you give some insight into like what you might expect at certain ages or even some resources that you might want us to look into?
So again, this probably warrants its own podcast, not even just an episode. It probably warrants its own podcast answering this question, but it's a fairly difficult question to answer succinctly for a couple of reasons. And I'm going to preface, and then I promise I will get to your, the main core of your question. The first part is narrative language isn't like a simple isolated skill like so many other language or cognitive skills that have milestones or developmental norms associated with them. Because we've got narrative language that requires receptive and expressive language skills, whether that's, you know, comprehending a certain amount of text, whether that's combining words into phrases to sentences and sequencing those, the grammaticality, the vocabulary. You know, if I looked at each one of those, I could tell you the developmental norms for each of those, maybe sub skills, but sometimes it's hard to say when I've got this composite skill that's made up of all of these other sub skills, sometimes it just gets a little messy and hard. And then you have to add in cognitive skills, right? Like we've got working memory going on. If it's a personal narrative, we've got some long-term retrieval. It's just very complex. And you have to have all these simultaneous, like the integration of simultaneous skills. And so that makes it hard to have norms. But also in addition to that, storytelling is a specific language skill, and it's 100% going to be reliant on exposure and experience. So let's just say I have a 3 or 4 year old, right? I'm gonna, because a lot of times we're looking for, you know, norms or developmental norms for littler kiddos. A 3 or 4 year old who's been read to or told oral stories a lot, if I looked at their skills and compared it to another student who doesn't have a disorder or anything, but just hasn't been exposed to very many books or oral stories, I'm not going to expect them to have the same level of skills. And so in that sense, because it's so experience-based, it's hard to say, well, this is normal, because you'd have to say, but normal for who? And then you'd have to go through norms for normal for what does this, 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 and this look like, which is hard, doesn't give you an answer to your question yet. Don't worry, and feel free to stop me if you're like, this is making no sense, just stop me.
No, this makes total sense. I think the point about it being a culmination of many, many different skills, like, hits the nail on the head. And even the fact that you were able to list like all of the skills involved, you know, those are just good things to kind of keep in mind about how multifaceted it really is. So it makes sense that there are, there's not like an easy answer, but I know you're getting to the point where you're going to give us some tangible
things. Hopefully something tangible, right? Because that's what we need. It's no fun to listen to someone be passionate and then be like, but what am I supposed to do? That's not fun. So I hope, if nothing else, by the time I get to the end of this part of the tangent, you'll get me. But I'm going to use a slight analogy that I might use as we answer a couple other questions. And it has to do with what we just talked about with using that composite language skill. It's like building a birdhouse, right? If you were to come ask me, just humor me for a second. If you were to say, what is developmentally appropriate? What age should my kid be able to build a birdhouse? You'd probably be like, that's a great question. I don't know. Well, to build a birdhouse, you have all these sub skills, right? Like you have to be able to use like a hammer and nail or a screwdriver. And a kid might be able to watch his dad do that and learn how to use a hammer and nail and use a screwdriver. But if they never watched their parent or are never taught how to use those all together to make a birdhouse, they might make something that resembles a birdhouse, but not really. But if you want them to really make a birdhouse, you've got to teach them how to use those skills. So given all of that information, I want to say there are milestone data that are on the internet. You can look those up. They'll say something along the lines of like at age 2 or 3, kids can start sequencing phrases and sentences to make a story that is, maybe is unrelated, but there's bits and pieces everywhere. They'll say by about 4, you can start telling a cohesive story, or I should say a more cohesive story with maybe a character and a main topic and a setting, but they often like don't have this ending or resolution. And then they'll say it's usually by 5 or 7 that kids start to tell this whole true narrative with like a problem, a setting, a character, problem, setting, attempt, consequence, the whole shebang. But what's really interesting is the current research contradicts what those norms say. They say that actually there are 3-year-olds that can do what they're saying 5 to 7-year-olds can do. Hmm. This is all based on given exposure and instruction, right? So, I mean, that's the caveat to this whole thing, is it's interesting that sometimes when we interpret norms or developmental norms, like if I were to read that off the internet, I might think, oh, my kid is fine. They shouldn't be telling a full story until they're 5 to 7 anyway. But that 5 to 7-year-old is receiving the same instruction as this 3-year-old, but this 3-year-old is doing the same thing this 5 to 7-year-old is doing. So I think the really interesting thing is that the current research that is going on is trying to better parse out these norms and give some more information, but it's hard because what's actually given is just a little bit outdated.
Okay. Yeah. This is very, I have a follow-up question to this. So I do really like the birdhouse analogy. I love analogies and that's excellent. Like, yes, if you haven't used a hammer or nails or whatever else you need to, whatever skills are involved in building a birdhouse, like obviously, you know, it's going to vary based on your exposure and your experience. So that's a great analogy. I think, and I'm sure you can do this, but like if you're, you know, conversing with a child of like any age, you're probably able to have a conversation and maybe engage them in some type of like storytelling task or just conversation in general, and sort of say like, ooh, something's off. Like they're missing XYZ skill, this certain component of storytelling. And then I guess my question is, if you see, you know, some missing information or you see that they're missing certain skills, would you then kind of try and like model those skills and probe those skills and do maybe some like exposure with certain components of narrative development? And then I guess if you do that and they respond to that, would you say, okay, it's just a matter of exposure versus a child who really struggles with that and then like continues to need that support? When would you kind of determine like, okay, this is due to exposure versus I see a real disorder here?
You are talking about one of my favorite topics ever, the application of narratives in dynamic assessment or a kind of response to intervention, MTSS type way, where we're really measuring not what do you know right this second. So, right, because that's biased by exposure and experience. We're saying, can you learn to do this? Because the disability in learning that language, that's what I'm looking for as a speech language pathologist or any special educator. They're looking for a difficulty in learning, but it's just exactly what you said. If you take some baseline data and you realize they're missing whatever you want, whether it's a story grammar part, you know, they're just not telling you anything about the problem, something like that, or there's grammatical errors or there, whatever it may be. And then you teach it to them in this amount of time and they seem to get it and it clicks. Yes, exactly what you said. I'd say it's most likely an exposure issue, not like a disability or disorder type issue.
Gotcha. Okay.
Okay. So I'm a literacy specialist and not in the speech world. So I was like writing questions while you were talking.
Love it.
So I guess my question is, when does this go for, and I don't know, maybe if this is going to be a hard one, you might need to think on this. I don't know. when does this go for like the narrative skills go from being like a literacy skill as like a classroom teacher, one that I would address, to something that you're addressing as a speech therapist in like the pullout speech setting?
Okay.
I don't know if you want me to clarify that at all or not, but.
How about I try responding? And if you're like, that is not what I'm going for, Callie, please redirect me, because that happens. So the first thing that I probably, there are two things that come to mind. The first thing is, right, as a teacher, you're probably looking at a standard, whatever your state uses, that standard. Are they meeting a certain expectation, or are they on a certain trajectory to meet that expectation? If that is like the only like standard that this kid is not meeting, and there are other, at least for me, a speech language pathologist, language related skills that they're able to use, and they're just having a little bit of a difficulty with narratives. I mean, I don't know how your school system works. For mine, you could potentially do a referral to an MTSS or RTI program, give them those tier two interventions, see how they respond, kind of like Liz was saying, because if they respond to the instruction and they're doing better, then you can give them those tier two instructions that are, you know, just small group, more individualized, but not sped. And then, you know, put them back in gen ed as soon as they don't need, or I guess they're always in gen ed, but put them back just in those tier one classroom type instruction settings. That's my first response. If they didn't do well in that RTI or tier two small group intervention, I might refer, you know, make a sped referral. Mm-hmm. And then a speech language pathologist could do a more in-depth analysis. Oh my goodness. Now I'm losing the second thing that I was going to say.
I think that makes sense though. Like, you know, when you're talking about delineating and, you know, challenges related to exposure versus, you know, a language disorder, you know, with the whole dynamic assessment piece, I mean, I can see that it's possible that a classroom teacher may not have the complete background needed to do kind of that dynamic assessment. And maybe that would come from those like tier two supports and they can kind of make those judgments as to whether or not, you know, their little intervention is effective and the child is gaining those skills versus, okay, this is something that needs, you know, more further support and further assessment.
Exactly. Exactly. That's, I don't know if that answers the question, but that in theory is how it should work. Is before, you know, just because they're not doing well with a certain standard doesn't always warrant a straight SPED referral, right? We don't want to make a SPED referral for every little thing, but that's hopefully where a good RTI type program is. I guess my other thing that I would say, and this is from the perspective of a speech language pathologist, is I often am not going to qualify a student solely because they have fine language skills until I get to narrative language, or for whatever reason, they just are not good at this. Usually there's a more core skill deficit, like the abstractness of the language or an ability to either comprehend or use certain complexity or syntactic complexities. And then I'm using a narrative based approach because I don't write my goal like they're going to read a narrative, they're going to tell a narrative. I'm saying that we're going to work on the syntactic structure, but I'm embedding it into the context of a narrative that's academically relevant and motivating. So that, I guess, would be my other thing, is if you see your students struggling with more core deficits, they're probably going to struggle among lots of different standards, not just like a narrative type standard. That makes sense.
That makes sense. You would, it, like, because narrative development is so multifaceted and complex, like it would be rare to kind of see a child that like just has trouble formulating a story without any other like language.
Exactly.
Challenges.
Not saying it maybe couldn't happen, but I would say it's highly unlikely.
So what does like narrative intervention look like in the speech classroom? I know you said like you're embedding it in with like other skills, but like what, if you're working with a child and you're targeting narrative skills, like what might a session look like?
So usually what I start with most kids, and I don't know that I said this at the beginning, so I'm going to make a brief preface. When we're looking at narrative, there are subgroups. So you can do a retell, which is retelling a probe story. That's a thing that they do in school, right? It's to probe comprehension. But then we also have narratives that are generative. So we're generating a narrative, which could be personal or it could be fictional, but there are those two separate things. I start with a retell because it helps teach my kids a structure. So I will tell them a story that's been kind of pre-constructed by me, or I've chosen a good story that has a certain story structure. For example, like there's a character, a setting, a problem, attempt, an emotion associated with the whole thing, and then an ending. And so I tell them the story and then I say, okay, and I'm, oh, okay, I should back up. I also have visuals. So I've got like pictures of the story, and then I have what I call story grammar icons. Lots of people use them. They just, it's like a picture of a character and a picture of a setting. And it just helps to create this meta awareness of there's a lot of different pieces that go into a story. I have the kids take turns retelling the story with both visual and story grammar supports. And you're gonna have to stop them. They're gonna miss a lot of stuff because this is a hard skill for them, but you just support them. I need you to tell me who you're talking about, you know, if they forget the character, because I'm confused. Who are you talking about? Sometimes they don't even have this meta awareness that if I don't say a character's name, you're gonna be confused. So you help them go through like that. And then I'll say, okay, let's level up and then take away the pictures. So we're systematically decreasing support. So now they just have these story grammar icons. They retell the story and I'm supporting them to tell all these different parts, and then I take away all of the visual supports and say, okay, now you do it by yourself. I'll help you as you need it. That's how I construct this foundation, because they're learning this cognitive schema. It's almost like they're learning a graphic organizer in their head that they can use when they go back to class. That doesn't have to be on paper necessarily, but they can have it in their head and apply it to whatever story they want. That is just an example. They could look a million ways, but that's kind of an example of what it looks like in my room.
Cool. I wouldn't have even, like, if someone quizzed me and said, what are the different types of, like, narratives? Like, the fact that, you know, you just said, like, retelling, and that could come first using some of that visual support, and then moving into, generative, you said?
Yeah, generation, whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that makes total sense that the retell aspect would be a good starting point before you're going to have students generate their own stories. Because then you have that foundation of those, like, all of those story elements for them to then, you know, expand and make their own stories. So that's a big takeaway for me.
And it can look a million different ways. It can look a million different ways. That's just a way that I do it, and a way that the literature has shown is effective and evidence-based. You could do it a million ways, but that's the way I do it.
So it's interesting to see how, like, a speech therapist in a structured way would kind of work on that. And so I think we've touched on, like, the speech aspect. We've touched on, like, you know, maybe what a teacher can do if they suspect some challenges related to narrative development by making a referral, or just kind of exposing the child to the aspects that they are struggling with, and then seeing if that results in a change. Do you have kind of similar suggestions for parents? What would you say for parents in terms of helping their own children with narrative development?
That's a good question. And I think I don't want to say it depends on age, because some of these things are going to apply to everyone, but the principles that I'm going to share also are going to apply to anyone, whether you have a language disorder or delay or not. The thing that I always tell parents, and it's never too late, I always say, as soon as you can, start giving your child that experience and exposure to storytelling, whether you're telling them stories, whether you're driving and you're talking about, you know, what happened in the day, whether you're reading a story, all of those exposures from a young age are going to help give them that exposure or that model to what you ultimately want them to do. If you've never done that with your child or do it very rarely, there's a good chance they're not going to do it. And a lot of parents will come and tell me, well, my kid's 7 or 8 now and is struggling with, you know, this stuff in school. I'm sorry, like, that you can't go back, but it's okay. Believe it or not, you can still do things like that with your kids when they come home. Truth is, if you ask your kid what happened at school, they're probably going to say nothing, because that is a very kid thing to do. Try getting involved in your child's life and finding something that's maybe not what did you do at school to ask about, or ask an emotion related question, like, did something happen today that made you mad or happy or something like that? Because we remember our stories because they evoke an emotion. So that's something I often tell parents, you know, and sometimes your kid is going to say no. They're going to say, I don't want to talk to you. But I think sometimes with sincerity and some questions, like emotion related questions, they might start telling you more of a story throughout the day. And just like you would talk to your friend on the phone, if your friend started leaving out random bits of information and you were confused, you're not going to let your friend, if you really care about them or what they're saying, you're not going to let them keep talking. At the end of the story, be like, hey, you just talked for 25 minutes. I have no idea what you're saying. You're going to stop them and say, okay, I'm confused, and this is why I'm confused. And then have them fill in the information. They get this meta awareness that, okay, what I left out made you confused. I need to do that next time. So even things like that for your older kids, and even younger kids, those 3-year-olds, they can develop that meta awareness too of, oh, I didn't tell you who I was talking about. That is confusing. With my little kids, I'm like, haha, that's silly. I wouldn't do that with my 5 or 7-year-old. They don't think it's as cute. But you can develop those meta awareness skills as early as, you know, 3 years old. Maybe it's not robust as your older kids, but it's pretty amazing what those kids can do.
I think that's such a good point. And even as a speech therapist, like, sometimes, well, a lot of the time, you get kids who are telling you a story and you're just like, mm-hmm. Like, I like looking to the mom to translate, like, can you fill in some of this information? But, like, you know, for parents and educators and speech therapists too, like, taking a step back and giving the child that feedback directly, like, I'm not understanding, like, you know, and giving them some of those cues, like that feedback can be enough to then later in the future, make, you know, build that meta awareness for them to repair and improve their storytelling in the future versus just being like, oh, you're four, you know, you'll develop these skills somehow on your own. So I think that's a really, really good tip. Is there anything that we didn't cover? I mean, I probably like a million things, but that you really like want to say about narrative development?
Oh my goodness, that isn't going to take a whole other podcast episode.
Well, you did say that someone needs to create a podcast on narrative development. So I think that's a perfect job for you.
I'll just cut, you know, start recording all of my ramblings. But oh, I'm trying to think.
What you thought we were going to do is just easily record our ramblings.
But guess what? A lot of times those ramblings can be really, really helpful to people.
I think they are.
Yeah, despite the fact that sometimes they're like off the top of your head and don't have a lot of organization, they can still be helpful.
You're right. yeah, if there's nothing like burning, then can you just tell everybody where they can find you? If they have questions, are you open to questions?
Oh, always.
Okay.
Beware, if you reach out to me, you might get more than you want, but I'm always happy to talk. I'm probably most actively on Instagram. My handle is at KKnightTherapy, KKNIGHTTHERAPY. I think I spelled that right.
I'll put it in the you know, the show notes.
Thank you. I also have a fairly new website. It's just KKnightTherapy.com. And when I say fairly new, I mean, I think it went live last week. So it's got a little bit on there, but you can go there for a little bit of information. And I do have a Facebook page, but I would probably stick to Instagram if you want to get me quick.
And do you have any resources for narrative development in your Teachers Pay Teachers store?
I do have some. I have some resources for narrative generation and supporting narrative generation. And then I have some for narrative retell. I do, if you know me, use a curriculum called Story Champs that you can purchase. It's by Language Dynamics Group. If you can afford something like that, it is an evidence-based curriculum that can be implemented at the general education or special education level. It's amazing and I love it and use it frequently. So I know that has nothing to do with my TPT store, but shout out, I also don't get paid for saying this. So I don't get paid for saying that.
Thank you so much for all of this information. Yeah, this is awesome. Yeah, I feel like I could have asked you like a million more questions, but I held back. So yeah, if you could start your own podcast, that would be great. And I will definitely be your subscriber.
I love it.
All right. Well, thank you so much for chatting with us.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to the Language and Literacy Collective podcast. We would love it if you would leave us a rating and review and visit us on Instagram @Language and Literacy Collective. See you next time.